Welcome to Conversations from the Back Porch, a podcast with Dr. Jane Vella. Jane is a noted academic and practitioner of adult learning who has written several books on how to design and teach learning events effectively, including the book Learning to Listen, Learning to Teach, The Power of Dialogue in Educating Adults. Jane is also the founder of Global Learning Partners, a company that provides workshops on this dialogue education approach to instructional design and learning facilitation. My name is Dwayne Hodgson. I am the Programs Director for Global Learning Partners. You can find us on the web at www.globallearning.com. And again, it's Global Learning with one L. Today, I'll be joining Jane via Skype on her back porch in Raleigh, North Carolina, to discuss learning designs and spontaneity. Good morning, Jane.
Hey, Dwayne. This is great.
Well, first off, I think we want to clarify some terms here. What do you mean by learning design?
A learning design is the structure that you use for teaching. Strange, it's called learning design, but it is the structure you use for teaching. And when I learned to teach many years ago in university, the central task was the organization of content into well-sequenced, bite-sized packets that could be taught, quote-unquote, by me, and quote-unquote, learned by the students. I was always careful about this, you know, and did it assiduously. However, such organization did not really structure the process or the time I had with the students. So let's be honest. What happened often was that my students heard me expound on the subject at hand. You know what I mean? I told them what they were learning, what they might have been learning if I had been quiet. Mm-hmm. So I needed, personally, a design, in a sense, to focus on learning and not on teaching. So dialogue education emerged, and it comes as a structure. Hello, my clock. Dialogue education comes as a structure of both content and process. The time, then, that we're working with is organized for learning and not for teaching. So I like that design to be tight because I love a subject that I'm teaching, and I can talk about it, talk the paint right off the wall. That doesn't help people learn.
What are some characteristics, then, of a tight design?
Well, a tight design, we use, people who know Global Learning Partners know that we use the famous seven design steps. And that means you consider the who, the people you're teaching, and everything you can find out about them, and the why, which is not the purpose, but rather the situation. The situation of that group of people. Why is this program needed by, for example, anatomy of the hand? All right. Why is this program needed by this group of first-year medical students? Mm-hmm. Then we consider the when. How much time do you have with them? The where. What's the site? And then we get to the hard-nosed, the content, which is tightly structured as a set of usually a set of nouns. So, for example, the bones of the hand, the muscles in the hand. You see, we take those bite-sized packets, and then we have a unique arrangement which we call achievement-based objectives. And it is a delightful way of assuring dialogue because we say for each of those content pieces, what are the learners going to do with that content? Because the assumption of dialogue education, which is what Global Learning Partners is working with, the basic assumption is that folks learn in dialogue when they are doing something with the new content. And that doing obviously can be at very many diverse levels. And then we design what we call, and we'll talk more about these as we go along, we design what we call learning tasks to get those achievement-based objectives into a particular task that a small group can do.
Okay, thank you. Now, it's interesting, as I listen to that again, I'm struck how you start with the who, because most of the times, I think our tendency would be to start with the content, what you called the what, or go to the how. I've got a great idea for a lesson today. Why do you start with the who, not the what or the how?
Because it's those folks learning which we're concerned about. And this is, you put your finger on it, Duane, this is perhaps the big difference. You know, why is this night different from every other night in the year? Why is dialogue education different? I think that focus on the learners and recognizing that their purpose, their situation, why they need this learning, and emphasis there, the bold word in that sentence is learning, is what determines the achievement-based objectives, the what, the content, and finally the learning tasks. So beginning with the who is terribly important. You've named it.
Okay. Now, I understand that you used to call this the seven steps of planning, and then later it became the seven steps of design. What prompted this switch?
Well, this
for
was
you?
A very personal thing. I discovered soon into the process that when I planned, it didn't work the way I had planned. I realized that planning is more deterministic. It says this is what's going to happen, no matter what occurs, this is what's going to happen. And that's not how life has been for me, or how life is in a one-hour seminar class or a five-day workshop. And so I prefer the term design, because design includes strict structures, but there's a flexibility in design. I said, for example, to the contractor on this back porch, I want windows. But I didn't tell him how many, how tall. You know, he gave me windows. The design word was windows. And the planning word would have been 14 windows, 3 foot by 8 foot. I know that when you say planning, it's a little bit too precise.
Okay, thank you. Now, it's interesting, too, because I've also heard the criticism of dialogue education, particularly of people who are taking the first workshop, Learn to Listen, Learn to Teach, that this is too structured. This too much focus on design, on putting plans in place, learning tasks ahead of time, pre-written ideas of what's going to happen. And they say, where is the spontaneity?
Yes.
How do you balance this tension between learning designs and spontaneity?
Well, that's why when we first spoke of doing these podcasts, the first term that came to mind, first topic was structure and spontaneity. My experience has been, and my experience is long and deep, my experience has been that the more structure, for some reason, and there must be a rule in nature somewhere, the more spontaneity. There's a flow, and when people perhaps feel safe in the structure, they feel safe to say what's really on their minds, to raise those generative themes that are deeply significant to the situation. Maybe they'll talk about their fear. Maybe they'll talk about something that's an obstacle to their learning that you can address. So all I can say is that my experience has been the more structure, the greater spontaneity, and the greater creativity. And let me try this with you. You know, when I'm trying to learn to play the piano, I'm doing endless exercises of all the various scales. And my goodness, they are structured. I am not permitted to jazz them up. They say, learn these chords, learn these scales, and from that you will be able to write your jazz piece. Every discipline, I think, has such a basic training or basic educational unit that is tightly structured. And perhaps it has something to do with the synapses in the brain that can become automatic. A surgeon, the tenor in the opera, the pianist, the truck driver, all have to have those basic pieces so deep in them, Karen Rideout calls them at the cellular level, that they can contextualize them. And as you say, for people who have taken that learning to listen, learning to teach course, they remember the exhilaration of learning, and that learning seemed deeply connected to the structure of the course. However, what is being taught in that course is a set of principles and practices. The practices emerge from the principles. As time goes on and we grow more skilled in evoking education through dialogue, the practices become more contextualized, more appropriate to the particular group, to the geography, the culture, the economics, the political scene, you know what I mean. So there's I see a connection, basic connection between the careful structure, tight design, if you can call it that, and spontaneity and creativity.
Okay. Now, another practice that we see in dialogue education is to conduct a learning needs and resources assessment. And as I understand from your books, that means checking in with the actual learners who are coming mm-hmm. to a workshop or a seminar, asking them about their context, what they're doing, and learning what they need to learn, as well as what resources they bring. And from there, you go design your 7 steps, including these achievement-based objectives. So again, I can see the value that of checking in with people, but what do you do if something didn't come up in this learning needs and resources assessment, that it's sort of an emergent learning need during the workshop? When's it appropriate to set aside your ABOs or your learning task before you and take maybe a different route to put something else in place?
Well, first place, let me speak to the issue of the learning needs assessment. This is a chicken and an egg. The only analogy I can think of for this is, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which comes first, the learning needs assessment or the design of the course? For example, when people come to the Learning to Listen, Learning to Teach 4-day, week-long course, the course is all there. It's set up. And the leader of the course offers opportunity for the learners to name their resources. What do they know about adult education? What has been their experience with dialogue and dialogue education, etc.? What are their needs? What is their work situation? So that we can set that course in place. I'm not sure. In the new book, I put learning a needs assessment before the 7 design steps. I think it's appropriate, but I do say these may be both done at the same time. So maybe the chicken and the egg are all hatched together. Mm-hmm. But once I get a design, and let me say, for example, I do a lot of work at the church. If I'm teaching a course at the church and someone raises an issue, let me tell you what I do with it. Either I fold that issue into the design that I have at hand, because the time for the course is 2 hours. You have a 2-hour session. Or if it won't fold in, and most issues do, if it doesn't fold in so that you can say, you know, we're going to address that issue. It's a very important issue. We're going to address that issue actually in learning task number 2. And you move, and then you expand that learning task a little bit before you set it. Or I will honestly say, you know, that is such an important issue. I'm so glad you brought up the issue of the abolition of munitions as a way, you know, munition factories as a way to address the danger of war. I'm so glad you raised that question. We are going to do a course on that soon. I duck it, frankly. I say, this would take over this course. Do you see what I mean? And so somebody may raise an issue that's their issue, but there are 15 other people in the room who came for this course.
So Jane, I understand how you're talking about doing the LNRA beforehand, checking in with people, then making your decision using, I think, what you call the decisive voice as the facilitator and keeping needs of all the people in mind. I guess what I'm also curious about is if in the course of a learning event, say day two of a 3 or 4 day session, something comes up for an individual or even a group of people, hey, we really want to do this and we're actually more interested in this new topic than what's in the program. How would you deal with that? Because I found that quite challenging sometimes because I was trying to keep this principle of accountability in mind, of pre-work.
Yes.
But what's my accountability to the learners at that moment? What are some suggestions of what I could do?
Well, there are a couple of things that come to my mind, Duane, as you ask that question. First, I mean, I have faced this situation how many times? Oh, I can tell you, and in countries whose names I can't even still pronounce. But each time I had to consider, as you said, my accountability first to the whole group. Because usually it's a few people, maybe two, or even sometimes it's one person who raises an issue, and everybody might bite at the issue, but it's not everybody's issue. But you have made a learning contract. If you think of yourself in terms of you are accountable, and I'm so glad you brought that up, the whole issue of accountability. The structure means that I am accountable that these folks will learn in the time given what I am teaching. Now, they will not learn everything about it. God knows there are 14 books on the subject, and they have to read at least 7 of them, say the anatomy of the hand, before they can pass all the exams that are necessary to for the first year doctor to move to second year. I want that doctor to know everything that's knowable. But there are certain basic things I can say to him, we will learn this much in this 2-hour session. Now, if someone, when we're talking about the epidermis, talks about, well, what happens with burns? I say, good question. Not appropriate in this 2-hour session. Come up afterwards and I will give you 3 references, books you can read about wounds with skin wounds, etc. Anybody who's interested, I'll include that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly, I used the term earlier, ducking it. I'm not exactly ducking it. I'm saying it's not appropriate for this 2-hour session. I can say there will be a session on wounds, of skin wounds that follow, you know, when we get to the epidermis in 3 weeks. There will be, or I can address it briefly. That one thing I might do, which might assuage people, you know. I saw something very good in once where people said, what would happen if we followed, where the leader of a Global Learning Partners course, Learning to Listen, Learning to Teach, said, look at what we have to do today. If we follow this particular, this particular issue, what will happen to what we have to do today? And the group, just talk about it together. The group may say, oh, wait a minute. You know, we need this. If we're going to be teaching, designing and teaching tomorrow. They can come in on the decision. But here's the very important thing. They do not, learners do not make the decision about what is taught in the course. No. You have the accountability. Now, what is learned in the course is up to them, and is they are accountable for that. But they do not make the decision. And again, a phrase of mine that I love, Duane, is, look, this is an issue that needs a bottle of wine. Come and meet me at 5:00 this evening. Anybody from the class has time. I'll provide the wine. Bring what you need to eat. Come to my office, and we will have an all-nighter on this. I'm game for that. I love all-nighters. And the point of it is, that's not structured learning. I am accountable for that these young people go back to come to the next class completely skilled and knowledgeable about the anatomy of the hand.
Okay. One final question, Jane. Right. What do you say to a university instructor or maybe a corporate trainer or community worker who says, you know, I just go in and wing it?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I say, I will not come to your class. Again, I didn't wing it, but I go back to what I said originally. I learned how to structure the content. We in dialogue education are considering, and remember, dialogue education is a theory. And I would be very happy, I want to go on record as saying, praise the person who can disprove it. Disprove these theories, because that's the only way they will be improved. No question about that. But to wing it, I find that disrespectful of a special, of an adult audience. I'd find that disrespectful of a kindergarten.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jane, for taking some time to chat about this issue.
Well, I love it.
This has been a lot of fun. You've been listening to Conversations on the Back Porch, a podcast with Dr. Jane Vella. You'll find more information on dialogue education and the work of Global Learning Partners at our website, www.globallearning.com. Again, that's Global Learning with one L. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we invite you to join us on the Voices listserv, where you can post questions for Jane and other people in the network. Thank you very much. Bye, Jane.
Bye, dear.